Look at them yo-yos, that's the way you do it. You play the guitar on the MTV. That ain't working, that's the way you do it. Money for nothing and your chicks for free. Now that ain't working, that's the way you do it. Let me tell you, them guys ain't dumb. Maybe get a blister on your little finger. Maybe get a blister on your thumb. We got to install microwave ovens, custom kitchen deliveries. We got to move these refrigerators.
Woo! Here we go. All right. True North, episode 55. We are back. We're weathering the storm. We've got the crew here today. We are going to rip it up. We're going to talk about digital credit. We're going to talk about amplified Bitcoin. We're going to talk about securities, Bitcoin, macro environment. We've got a whole bunch of things we're going to talk about today. And for those of you that are new here, this is True North, the investment grade Bitcoin podcast. And we've got Mike, Grain of Salt, Soleil, Dan Hillary. I think Mason Ford is going to join and pop on as well. He's kind of in and out, but he's got bad internet. And yeah. Okay. So we're going to work through that. All right. I guess first thing, we'll kick it off with a little bit of Tim.
Ladies and gentlemen, what you're about to hear may be amazing, but it is not financial advice. It's for informational and educational purposes only.
Boom. There it is. Everything we're going to talk about is for fun and not financial advice. We're going to talk a little bit about the earnings strategies, earning call. We're going to talk about Bitcoin, thinking about how to value a amplified Bitcoin company, or a, as Soleil called it last week, a continuous capital raising company, a CCRC. And we'll think about, you know, valuations. How do we think about the pref equity? How do we think about what this looks like on the horizon? Think about the entire market as a whole, macro, what's on the horizon here in the next couple of months. We've got a potential new chairman of the Fed, Kevin Warsh, on the horizon. We've got a Fed meeting in about 35 days. It's Jerome Powell, one of Jerome Powell's last couple Fed meetings. Anticipation for reduction in interest rates on the horizon. AI is ripping through everywhere. Claude bots are all over the place. Everybody's trying new different AIs. I feel like every single AI you use is outdated as you start using it. I mean, Dan, I've seen you now post about every single one of these AIs. Like every week you're like, oh my God, Opus 4.6 is like incredible. And you were doing Opus 4.5 like the week prior. So the world is changing so fast, and we're here to try to unpack it. So I'm going to kick it over to, I guess, Soleil. We'll start with you. What are you thinking about? What's on your mind throughout this week?
Man, Jeff, I'm all bulled up. And when I say that my life has never been better, I mean that literally. So let me know. Have you guys seen Office Space?
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's an absolute classic. If you haven't watched it, like, your homework is to watch it. And without giving too many spoilers away, the main character at the beginning, he's talking to his therapist. And he said, look, ever since I started working, every day was the worst day of my life. And the therapist is like, well, what about today? Is today the worst day of your life? And he's like, yes, it is. And I mean, it's kind of relatable, you know, maybe not Mason because he's only ever had a Bitcoin job. But for the rest of us, we work our butts off and your wealth is just being destroyed. It's being debased. So the harder you work, the poorer you get. And Bitcoin inverts that. And you can literally just buy Bitcoin and get off zero, and you become wealthier every day for the rest of your life. Even if you stopped working, your Bitcoin would continue to gain value. And so instead of like every day being the worst day of your life, once you buy Bitcoin, every day is the best day. It's just going to get better every single day. And it's just got me super bullish, and I'm ready to go.
That's a really great framework rolling into this, especially you think about it for your person and then you think about it for a company as well. I mean, I was working in traditional finance for 11 years. What I thought was like a very important job, like looking back at it, you know, I have a different perspective now, but I was working harder and harder and harder. I was working 80 hours a week. I was working on all these different deals. I was struggling to get ahead I felt like I was just constantly on this rat race, and I was getting tied up with these golden handcuffs of like, oh, hey, we'll give you this dollar denominated bonus 4 years from now. If you, you know, work here for 4 years, I'm like, this doesn't make any sense. And I kept getting tied up into it. And I truly have never been happier working here. I mean, the volatility is crazy, but having a baseline and thinking about Bitcoin as savings vehicle, long-term savings vehicle, I'm just happier than ever working here. So yeah, great framing. We'll kick it over to you, Dan. What are you thinking about?
Look, I mean, Stretch hit par at 100 today with Bitcoin at 68,000, 67,000. I thought that was quite remarkable. I think that's quite remarkable. And I think, you know, I was working through some of the financial derivatives you can build on Stretch. You can transfer kind of yield to like a someone who's looking for safety and someone who's looking for more risk and more return. I think Stretch is going to be the bedrock of a lot of stuff. Like, obviously, I'm building a stablecoin backed by Stretch, but I think people are going to build ETFs on these things. People are going to build banks that hold a portion in these things. There's pref ETFs that are backed by this stuff. Like, Bitcoin will just be the bedrock of the financial system. And yeah, I mean, the price action is terrible, so I totally get it. But to lighten people's spirits, if you look at the daily moves of MSTR relative to Bitcoin over the past couple of weeks, it's starting to trade like it did in 2024 for the first time in a long, long time. Because when Bitcoin goes up, it actually goes up too. So something to look out for. Most bottoms have been marked by, I mean, I've been calling for a bottom for the past 3 months, but most bottoms have been marked by MSTR outperformance relative to Bitcoin.
Yeah, yeah.
Bottoms have no bottom.
The MSTR IBIT ratio, yeah, moving up, like trending and breaking out, right?
Which is weird. You would think if the institutional investors who actually move the price of MSTR, it's no one on Twitter. You would think if they were very bearish on Bitcoin, they would be selling MSTR to a discount. Because people have to remember, if Bitcoin goes down forever, then MSTR will go down faster. So therefore, there shouldn't be an MNAV premium. There should be an MNAV discount because the leverage cuts in the opposite direction. However, people are obviously assigning a premium to MSTR right now, more so than they have in the past few months. And that's a good thing, in my opinion.
So, I mean, just excellent game theory there, thinking through it. It's the... if institutions thought MSTR was going to break, it would just keep going down. I mean, the takes on X are ridiculous, right? People are like, oh, I'm getting that tingling in my plums thinking about FTX collapse, and like, you know, just like, oh my gosh, they can't look at the balance sheet, right? Like, we talk about this literally every single week. They've got, I don't know, $48 billion of net capital on their balance sheet against $8 billion of debt that they can refinance and $8 billion of pref equity. And they're, I mean, how much capital have they raised in Q1 already? It's like billions of dollars of capital that they've already raised in Q1. So yeah, I mean, it's just crazy out there. The takes of everybody thinking this company's going, Strategy is going to go out of business. It's just asinine. And then you look at the product like Stretch, like that's it. Like, that's what we talk about today. Stretch hit 100. While, you know, the underlying collateral has dropped 30%, 40, 50, actually 46% since the all-time high back in like, what, October, November? And their instrument is trading at par. Like, that is a signal that people believe in the security of Bitcoin being around for the long term. And this is something I just keep hitting on, is that the market doesn't understand the risk of these things. I'm personally trying to build a risk framework of what this looks like, trying to wrap your head around it, because there's so much data here. There's so much data looking at these preferred instruments that has never existed before compared to any of these other traditional debt instruments. And you could start to build entire risk profiles thinking about like historical backtesting. Okay, what would it have done historically? And you could go look at that performance. What would it look like on a future basis? Like, take some assumptions and play with those assumptions based on history, based on future expectations. Take all of the Bitcoin on-chain data, decipher it with an AI computer. Like, we have the power to do that stuff now. Get an understanding of your view of the future adoption curve of Bitcoin, right? And the supply curve is fully calculable. And the supply doesn't change as the demand increases or decreases. that is fundamentally different than anything else that's ever existed before. And like, you can underwrite that. Like, that's so underwritable. And I just think people are just largely missing this, and nobody is pricing the risk appropriately or even thinking complex about the risk. Do we get there? Maybe not. I don't know. But I think there's a lot to do on that front. Maybe computers just do it without thinking about it. I don't know. Fun stuff. Dan, actually, question for you. Have you looked much at the options market on Stretch or these other preferred instruments?
Yeah, they're pricing the forward rate of the dividend as about 10-11% annualized. So they're pretty efficient right now. I mean, the spreads are super wide. So for anyone watching, like, all the strategy preferreds except Strike, that's STRK, have an options market, which is pretty interesting. So you can hold your product and sell covered calls and get even more yield if you so choose. But the way you price an option on a instrument that has a dividend is there's a forward value of the option based on the dividend annualized over time, blah, yada, yada, yada. Essentially, it means the puts are more expensive than the calls. That's all you have to know. And if you look at the options market on Stretch, that is the case. You know, the 100 strike calls are very cheap because obviously Sailor's selling the 100. But anything below the puts are, you know, look, it's like 23% annualized volatility. And most options are valuable because of the volatility of the underlying equity. And the volatility on the puts still is actually quite high. It's almost as high as gold and Bitcoin. So what that means is the options are pretty expensive. They're illiquid, but they're very expensive. And so I think, you know, if you wanted to, this is an interesting trade idea, not financial advice. But one way to go levered long on any of the prefs is you can just sell the put option, which is the right to purchase it at a lower price, which gives you essentially exposure, dividend equivalent exposure, because of the way the options are priced based on the dividend, to the underlying security. So instead of having to go out and buy a bunch of STRF to collect the dividend, you can just sell the put with much less capital and have price exposure and appreciation if Strife doesn't go down too significantly. So
especially if you're willing to buy it. Yeah, right, right.
Yeah, exactly. It's like a capital efficient way to get the dividend exposure to one of the instruments.
Capital light,
exactly.
Capital light. Leverage heavy. All right. I like how you think, Dan. All right. Over to you, Mike. Or go ahead, Dan.
Actually, no, I'm done talking on that. I'll hop in after Mike.
Yeah. Mike, what are you thinking about? You're grinding, you're pounding the pavement on the silicone. What's cooking?
Yeah. So look, when I write an article for X, I have to have a thought where, you know, is it defensible? And I want to put something out that can stand scrutiny. So when it comes to AI, I'll dream up my own idea. I'll do a framework in Jeff, you're like me. We could do it in Excel or Google Sheets with an idea, rows and columns, come up with an idea. And then we plug in some formulas, numbers, assumptions, come up with something. And then what I do is then I stress test it in two or three different AIs after it comes out. Does this hold up for scrutiny? So by the time I post it and somebody comments on me, it's already been stress tested. That's what I use AI for. And people are like, you know, I don't think what people get about AI is this. If you ask AI a simple question, you get a simple answer. If you ask AI a complex question, you get a complex answer. And so the more complexity in your prompts or the more complexity in the spreadsheet that you build, and then you ask the prompts for it, you get a much better return. And I know this is true because I see people using, I told people use the AI of your choice for the article I wrote last night. And this one guy kept on posting it into Grok, and it was brutal how terrible he was at prompting it, right? And
he's and Grok in the comments is like, you know, dumb Grok. Like
it is.
Comment Grok is dumb Grok. Like if you want the real stuff, like you got to go prompt it in the.
And you have, by the way, you have to buy a paid for version. Yeah. You get a different version for $20. I pay the $20 a month. I don't get paid by ChatGPT. I don't get paid by Perplexity or Claude. Claude is free though. But I've tried, each one I use different ones for different purposes. And it's just not one is, they all have different designs. But anyway, so my takeaway for this is that AI has made me more balanced because I'm not scared of posting something because I've already stress tested it. So I think that's my big takeaway. And then we'll talk about my model coming up, you know, what I worked on. But I'm looking for, I just want, you know, are you guys going to be in Las Vegas? Is there anything going on there?
Oh yeah. Let's hit on Las Vegas. Boom.
That's a good idea.
We should go to Vegas. We should go to Vegas.
Dude, we should all meet in Vegas, right?
We should meet in Vegas. We are having an event at Strategy World in Vegas. It is coming up in the next couple of weeks. It is Monday, February 23rd. If you are interested in attending, go to our website, mstrtruenorth.com/event. You can click the event tab up here at the top. You can have the ability to go get tickets here. This is going to be a high alpha, high signal event. It is not going to be recorded. There is going to be opportunity to network with people that are operating in the industry. The True North team will be there. A lot of C-suite level people will be from Bitcoin treasury companies will be there. You'll have operators at a bulge bracket bank. You'll have custodians. You'll have trading platforms that are operating in the space. So our goal is to really shine a light into what is actually happening behind the scenes with these Bitcoin treasury companies, companies that are holding Bitcoin. How does it work? How does securitization work? How do banks think about these things? How does trading, like how do you go from buying Bitcoin to putting it in a custody? What does institutional custody look like? How do we think about that? How do companies manage these things? And we're trying to shine a light into that. So if you're interested in that stuff, this is going to be the only place you're going to be able to hear about it. You're going to hear about it at Strategy World as well, but this is going to be like very focused 4-hour event. We have a preliminary schedule here and it looks something like this. We've got a bulge bracket bank. Barclays is going to be there. James Lavish is going to be talking about macro from the BTC Opportunity Fund. We have Anchorage Digital. We also have BitGo. Mike Belshi, CEO from BitGo, is going to be there. And then we also have somebody from Kraken coming. We've got Bitwise is going to be in the house. Matt Hogan, CIO at Bitwise. So good perspective of being an investment officer. Ben Workman, CIO of Strive. So a lot of people are going to be in the room talking about what is actually going on behind the scenes here. There's also a networking and after party event from 8 to 11 p.m. This is the location. It's at Gatsby's in Las Vegas. It's going to be a great time. You're going to have a wristband to get in there. There's only 33 tickets left. And yeah, look forward to seeing you all there. It's going to be a great time. We had a great time last year. I think it'll be even better this year. You guys got anything else to add?
Can't wait.
Can't wait.
I think it'll be fun.
Yeah, you know, and I've said this before. If you want to meet Saylor or Fong or Andrew Kang, the exec staff, or Strive, or these people will be there. You get to meet them, and you get to talk to them. And then it is completely different meeting them in person than it is just watching a video from them. It really is, because you can just ask them and say, "Well, what do you think about this?" and see the reaction. So I think it's great.
Yeah. And the reality is we cover a lot of things, and we're like trying to stay at the knife's edge of what's happening in this industry. I mean, I'm working for an operating company now, thinking about this entire world, and I see the world a little bit differently. Dan, you do the same. Soleil, I know you're constantly thinking about these things. So we can't address all the questions that come in the comments here. And this is a great place to do it. Like have those conversations. I love meeting all the people in the space, and it's a great time. So we can commiserate over the sucky prices and then think about what these should be worth in the future.
Good stuff. We had talked about this previously, Jeff, in 2024, and I showed it price of, you know, it just barely hit $2,000. This is pre 10-for-1 split prior to May 1st. And then the price, it dropped 50% on May 1st of 2024. And I was there and I was like, wow, this is, you know, kind of, you know, did I know that it was then going to do a 10-for-1 split and then do a 4X in August for the rest of the year? No, I didn't know that, but I still went to the event, met the people, and it was an awesome event. And then I was there, obviously we were there last year. We did our inside event last year, and then we're now following it up now. So I could not imagine that this would have transpired over 2 years. There's just no way.
Oh yeah. The landscape has changed so much. And I mean, Mike, to your point, let's see, Strategy World, was in May of 24. That first one you went to is May of 24. The price of MSTR went from, what is this? $45 to 1,900, went from 450 to 1,999.99. They came back down around 118 in bottom tier, around $100. A lot has transpired since then. I mean, Strategy at the time held about 100,000 Bitcoins. Now they hold 714,000 Bitcoin, and the price is very similar to where it was then. And we've never seen this business model work. The amplified preferred equity business model work in a bull market. This is back in the era of convertible bonds. This is even the convertible bond era. And we have yet to see this puppy turn and go to the upside during a bull market. So I'm excited about that. I'm bulled up. I think this is a great opportunity. Like the balance sheet has never been healthier. You are seeing signals in the market with Stretch trading at 100. They're likely selling shares of Stretch today, so bringing in more capital to buy more Bitcoin. That's incredibly accretive to the common stock as they're able to buy Bitcoin. You've got to think about, they've got to pay dividends on that pref equity into the future, but any gain on that Bitcoin held over and above the interest rate payable is effectively going right directly to the common stock shareholder. How'd Saylor explain this? It's like the thermodynamics of volatility. Like if you slice off the volatility, you strip off the volatility to the upside on Stretch and you strip off the volatility to the downside on Stretch, that excess volatility is transmuted over to the common stock. Like it doesn't just disappear, it goes to the common stock. So to the extent that there's been a significant drawdown in MSTR, there's a lot of excess volatility from the preferred equity, the $8 billion of preferred equity instruments that they've issued in the last 12 months in the common stock. But as that flips and turns the other way, that excess leverage starts to look really attractive, in my opinion. I mean, Dan, you're pulled up on MSTR right now too, right? I mean, you're thinking long-term here.
Yeah, I think MSTR is good here. Especially because I think Bitcoin's like depressed in terms of price. So if you think Bitcoin is depressed in terms of price, I mean, it was cheaper relative to book value a couple of weeks ago, but you know, Bitcoin is a little more expensive. So, I mean, you're getting at like 1.18 times MNAV with like massive leverage, 33 amplification. So, you know, it's a definitely significant Bitcoin outperformance.
Hey, can I switch to a quick, I did three surveys, show you the results, and I can show you what the current sentiment is. Let me do it. Let me figure this out here. Share a screen. Sure. Okay. Share this window. Let's see if this works. Aha, it does work. So I did three different polls. I did this poll over here. Does MSTR retake all-time high in 2026? And 52%, 51.9% said yes. Okay. And there was almost 1,200 votes. So that's a right. decent sample right. size, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Now, what's really interesting is that, and this is where I always get the comment from the person with like 32 followers that's been on X for 3 months. Does Bitcoin retake the all-time high in 2026? I had 615 votes and the yes was almost 64.4%. Of course, I always get the person that's like, dude, are those the same people that vote in both of the polls? I'm like, I don't know. It's freaking, I'm just telling you what the sentiment is, right? And they're like, well, how do you pick? I don't pick any of these people. It's whoever wants to respond back and vote. And then Michael Cantro, who's been on TV like a whole bunch of times, I just met the guy recently online, never in person. And we talked about the Goldilocks and that's over here. And I did this one, it kind of worked out this way, but not this way. So Goldilocks means, just like it says there, the US economy is in Goldilocks phase, which you have steady growth, low inflation, strong jobs and neutral rates. That's like pure Goldilocks. So are we in pure Goldilocks, 21%? Close to it, but soon is 29%. And then you have no, meaning inflationary. And then you have no, meaning recession. Well, it's kind of crazy that this came out 50-50, right? I mean, it's crazy that each category was almost precisely, was pretty close. It's pretty close in the middle. And then you have like your little bell curve. So I think that's kind of odd. Again, you know, the same person, you know, different people are always like, oh, are all these polls with all the same people? I'm like, no, I don't know. It's just a sentiment indicator. And so anyway, so I I put this together to see how things are going. So do I think, am I bullish? Yeah. Do I, you know, am I bummed about the price action? Absolutely. So hopefully that helps. And then can I switch to a quick history lesson?
Yeah, strategy? Rip it.
So let me do this. Share screen, share window, this window. So when Jeff, we had talked about this. I wanted to figure out a valuation for strategy. So I started looking through the decks because I wanted to kind of figure out what happened in the past. But this ended up being really interesting. And I'll show this because now when we begin to think about things, it's kind of weird that it's like that. I know these are kind of small. So in Q3 of 2020, this was the first presentation where it was after they started buying Bitcoin, right? Because they bought it in August, and then the presentation for the Q3.
Yeah, was when can you zoom in a little bit?
Let me see how to do this. View. That better?
Yeah.
So in their presentation, they were still talking about analytics market and cloud growth. Over here, they talked they have a proven history of free cash flow, right? And then when you get to this section over here, it has a unique balance sheet strategy that uses Bitcoin to provide asymmetric upside and energize new investors. And there's like one other mention of Bitcoin in it. That was it. There was, so you look at that, you're like, oh, okay, well, they were just getting started. This is the part which I kind of didn't realize, which is kind of crazy. Let me move back over here. So in the Q4 2024 financial results, right over here, February 5th of 2025, they use this use of excess cash to acquire more Bitcoin. You're like, okay. And that's Q4 2024. The crazy part is when you get to this one is that the new strategy website did not go live until January of 25. So when we talk about Bitcoin per share and all of these metrics, the first KPI for that was here, it basically came about in this presentation over here, and it says Bitcoin, let me zoom in. You see, it says incremental Bitcoin accretion per share through purchases using excess cash. That happened in fourth quarter of 2024. So when we talk about Bitcoin per share, it's 5 quarters old, right? It's the last quarter of 2024. And now we're in the first quarter of 2026. So they just started doing this. And then they came out with this website because everybody thinks, oh, well, Bitcoin per share, this has been around. Nah, no. The website didn't come about, was announced on February 5th, 2025. Less than a year ago, right? Or just about a year ago, it says introducing the new strategy website. That's when they introduced it. So when we talk about Bitcoin per share and all this stuff, and by the way, Fong uses the term seasoning. He goes, oh, well, these instruments have to be out there. When we talk about Bitcoin per share, this metric is really not that old as a metric. So of course we all get this and we all get MNAV. But when we go talk to like the normies, they're like, dude, I have no idea what you're talking about. And part of the reason, because this is relatively new. And I think now when you look back at this in retrospect, oh, their dashboard website didn't go live until whatever, January of 1 year ago. I thought it was been alive for 2 years, but when you check the presentation. So is this surprising to you guys?
I'm just like imagining explaining this from where they're at today to one of my friends that's never heard about this. Like, I wouldn't even mention Bitcoin per share. You know, it's like I need to get over the Bitcoin hump first.
Yeah, and so when you look at this crazy stuff, I'm gonna show one more thing. Let me pull this up, and I think when you look at the you know, you go to the strategy presentation, you know,
their earnings
present. It is so much better than what it used to be. You cannot. This is the one showing that you know, again, here's the word, seasoning of digital credit. You know, this word is seasoning. I didn't come up with the word. Fong is using this word on TV because Stretch has only been around for 1 year. Sorry, Stretch IPO was July of 2025. It's not even a year old, right? So that's why that term is seasoning. We're hearing that in the news. And then I want to go to this. This is when they launched everything. So STRF went live in March of last year, March 21st. So STRF isn't even a year old yet. And STRD came out in June, right? And STRC came out in July. So people are like, oh, well, it hasn't ramped up. And it's like, really? I'm like, I don't know why people, you know, assume this. And then you get to these other crazy numbers, but I want to go to this chart is crazy right here. You know, what I was posting, and if you look at the end of Q4 of 2023, that was the tail end of crypto winter. And in Q4 2023, they had sub 200,000 Bitcoins. And now they have as this deck, it's whatever, 714,000 now. But did I think that they were going to acquire 500,000 Bitcoins as the price rocketed up? No, there's no way. I looked at these decks again yesterday and the day before, and there's no way I could conceive that they would acquire 500,000. Did you guys think they would acquire 500? They acquired, if they had 200,000 Bitcoins in Q4, they had 189,000. They acquired more than double the amount of the previous 2.5 years with a higher price. Is that absurd?
Yeah, no, it's totally absurd. I mean, back when they were holding 100,000, I thought, oh wow, maybe they'll get to 200. And I was like, it might take a decade. And here we are with 700,000. It's moved a lot faster than I anticipated. And they're able to build an entire industry on top of it. You know, one of the criticisms that I've really disliked throughout this whole thing is like, oh, wait till they can build or they can, you know, create products using this capital. It's like, that's what the pref, that's what the prefs are, right? Like they're using the capital to issue these instruments and they're taking on risk by issuing the prefs. And then somebody else put on here, Bitcoin per share, like it's not a good metric in the pref era. Well, I mean, even in the convertible bond era, you could think about Bitcoin per share, but you'd need to think about like the basic and then the diluted, and then the diluted varied. So you could even say that Bitcoin per share in the convertible bond era was kind of a tricky metric. I do agree there are some challenges with like identifying how much Bitcoin exposure, but ultimately, in my opinion, it's about how much Bitcoin exposure is there per share. It's like not Bitcoin per share. It's like Bitcoin exposure. Like how much excess volatility is shoved into the common stock. Like the more perpetual preferred equity that they issue, they're shoving more excess volatility into the common stock. And I think that's why they use this Bitcoin per share metric, is because it's a proxy for shoving that excess volatility into the common stock.
I like that evolution that you showed, Grain, where they were talking about their positive cash flow. And now, you know, that's definitely not something that they just hammer in their earnings calls now, because they're beyond that stage. It reminds me a little bit of that kids game. I don't know the one you've seen where kids will like roll a wheel and like keep it going with a stick and like chase the wheel. Have you seen this one? And that's kind of what the cash flow positive reminds me of. Like you only need a little bit of that cash flow positive to keep the wheel going. And then the momentum does everything else, right? So if you don't have the cash flow to even start buying Bitcoin or to get the convertible bond thing going, then you're kind of dead in the water. But once this gets ramped up and it gains momentum, the cash flow positive part becomes, you know, a footnote in the story.
Yeah, it's really because they've created this vehicle, right? That you see on the screen, this this image here, right? You've got the battery being the USD reserve, and then you've got the nuclear core, which is the Bitcoin that's held there that really powers a vehicle into the future. But the cash was effectively like pulling down cash flow and holding it for a period of time into the future.
Yeah. And you know, going back to what you guys are saying, first of all, a lot of people don't like this slide. And I'm like, I love that slide of the rocket ship because freaking Michael Saylor is a real MIT rocket scientist. Let's be realistic. But what I'll say is that why are markets hard to trade or hard or why do they invest? And Fong said this again on TV. He goes, look, originally we were buy and hold Bitcoin. That's what happened in 2020. And I didn't check to see when they started doing the prefs. Sorry, not the prefs, with the converts. Once they did the converts, they were like, oh, we could lever up a little bit with converts. And they started doing that. And it's like, oh, we could acquire more Bitcoin faster in the capital markets. Then what happened is it's like, oh, you know what we, so then obviously the market ran up. The last convert they issued was in January of 2025. And then they came out with the prefs in like I just said, in February of 2025. And so what happened is now everything is different. Again, it's like the converts. Oh, they had to be Delta hedged. And there's these convert guys that do it. They totally get how this works. And back then it's like, wait a second. Strategy is able to sell converts and the coupon is 0%. He's borrowing money for 0%. And I'm like looking at it, listen, you morons. He's giving a 40% upside on the conversion. So it's built into it. It's kind of like, you want to go buy a product on eBay and they're like, oh yeah. And you're like, do they charge for shipping? So I'm like, oh, they don't charge for shipping. Let me tell you a secret. They just increased the price of the product to include the shipping. It ain't free.
It's rolled in. Yeah, it's rolled in.
So the coupon, oh, he's borrowing money at 0% coupon. Money at free. He just gives you a 40%, you know, he has to give a 40% upside after the term. And that's built, like if you click the PDF and read it for 30 seconds, you would see that. But they don't even click the link. So now, where are we today? Now we're in this third scenario of the STRC has seasoned. So now it's the third environment. The convert environment is over. Initially, it was buy and hold Bitcoin. Fong said that. Then it was the convert market. Now it's the pref market. And if somebody's like, can you tell me how the pref market's going to affect MSTR? You know, I have some good ideas, but that becomes hard to model. Take it away, Jeff.
Yeah. And some other new evolutions that are happening in the space. And I've seen this happen with some of the shitcoin debt companies. And now I think Metaplanet, their recent equity issuance, used this model as well. They sold equity at a premium and had warrants attached to it as well, which was an interesting model. It's effectively selling your equity at a premium and then having a call option attached to it. I don't know the exact details. I haven't looked like incredibly deeply, but that's another interesting model that, you know, companies are finding other ways to issue equity at a premium by attaching little pieces and components to it. So just something to think about. But another thing, I was listening to a Bitcoin Today space and they were all fumbling on what is so fascinating about Stretch? Like, why is it cool? Like what is the novelty here? And I think it's helpful to just reiterate, like, preferred equity has been around for a very long time. Like this access to the capital market has been there for a very long time. Historically, preferred equity used to be like the last resort. Like you'd go raise debt capital and then you'd go to the preferred equity market if you couldn't raise debt capital anymore. And it was kind of seen as like a desperation move to go access the preferred market. Now, Strategy has completely flipped that on its head and used it as a position of strength. Like, okay, how can I take infinite duration leverage, no margin call, like no principal due? I could do it in the preferred market. Okay, innovation number one. Innovation number two is you put a ticker on it and you make it publicly traded. Okay, if you wanted to go buy like Boeing perpetual preferred equity, you can't trade it. It trades 144A. You got to go to a broker and go trade back alley to go get some pref equity exposure or go buy like PFF, like a preferred equity ETF. Basically, it's illiquid, doesn't trade. But these instruments are so sexy. Lots of people want these, like not just institutions, like normal people, normal people want to think about this as like a savings account because this is backed by Bitcoin risk. I'm long Bitcoin exposure here. I can effectively have a theoretical type savings account or like a 2 month, 3 month type savings account in a wrapper that's publicly traded, and I can get it on Robinhood. I could get it in any of these brokerages. Okay, that's interesting. Now, on top of that, they have a ATM, a shelf offering, and they're able to issue new shares of this stuff, which effectively is why STRC was able to be created, because they can issue shares to peg the price at 100. And they could raise that debt-like capital without having a cliff maturity with a click of a button. Very low cost. They don't have to go back out to market and go do the, you know, song and dance and go like make a bunch of presentations and go run around the world and go find preferred equity buyers. Like, they're building the demand as we go, and they have the ability to like tap into that demand as it comes in the door. So like, that's why these things are so interesting. It's all of those components. It's like took an area of the capital markets that was historically just kind of drab and like very, it's not very exciting, and they made it incredibly exciting by making it publicly traded, throwing a shelf offering, making a unique instrument that's relatively stable, low vol with high yield. I mean, these things are better than, like, look at this. So on the screen right now, STRC is seasoned, trading near par. It hit par today. It hit 100. Interest rate, 11.25%. But at the same time, since August, the value of the underlying Bitcoin that sits on the balance sheet has gone down 30%. Yet the instrument itself is up 0.1%. And the dividend itself is up 5.3%. They've issued an additional $400 million of this stuff. It's crazy.
Yeah. And I want to say why they label this the iPhone. People ask this question. And the reason why on the other prefs, they have a fixed dividend. I don't use the term coupon because Saylor doesn't like that. The term coupon, that has a particular legal meaning. So the yield that it pays is set at 8%, right? On the other ones, typically. And so what happens is the price is able to float. What they've done on STRC, if you can go back to that slide, slide 61, what they do here is they have two levers. It has a floating dividend rate that can be, that's changed based upon the VWAP at the end of the month. And that's where they're able to, if we want to keep this target range, and that's the term they use, target range, 99 to 101, then what they do is if the VWAP is too low, then they ramp it up a quarter point, or they can go up a half a point. Now there is, as long as there's more demand for this, what they're going to do is they're going to continue to sell it off to keep it in that target range of 99 to 101. That's the goal. So they want to keep it that rate relatively high. And Jeff, we went back, we talked about this. What happens if STRC dropped to $50? Well, at 11, just assume 11%. If you could buy it at $50, automatically the effective yield would be 22%. Because instead of it being at 100, we have $50, and they have to pay out these dividends at an 11% rate based upon that par value of $100, and that's straight bonds. And so when we have these, you know, these commentators that make these flippant remarks, or these people with 100,000 or 150 or 200,000 followers, and they don't get what strategy is doing, I'm like, well, that's obvious, right? Yeah. And after a while, it's tiring. But the problem is they have 150,000 or 250,000 or a lot of followers, and they just don't get what he's doing.
Oh, yeah. It's crazy. Like, this is the most interesting story in all of finance. Like, these are interesting. Stretch, a perpetual preferred equity. I mean, today it hit par and it traded $97 million today. Like, that's interesting. What other perpetual preferred equity is trading $100 million a day? There isn't one. Like, it just doesn't exist. Like, if you want a yield instrument and you want liquidity associated with it on one specific thing, these are it. Like, this is it. So it's, these products are fascinating, very, uh, very interesting to analyze.
Can you go to slide 22?
Yeah.
So, sure. you know, look on slide 22. Look, I think the reason why people don't get this is not because it's complex, because it's dead freaking simple. And people just can't, they're like, it can't be that simple, because the mindset is it must be too good to be true. So when you look at this slide right here, Strategy was the largest US equity issuer in 2025. That's what it says. Are they allowed to lie in an SEC deck? No. So let's just take it at face value. They were 8% of the equity market. Total equity raise, they raised $23.3 billion. They were 6% of the common.
That's an insane statistic.
You look at these, any person will look at this and they're like, oh, you know, hey, Saylor, do you think you can raise $888 million to pay the prefs? Well, we raised $23 billion last year. You know, maybe we'll peel some off and buy cash, right? Well, the dude did that in January, and you go to the rocket ship, they now have $2.25 billion sitting in cash, 30 months of paying the prefs. So I don't think you could raise money. It's like.
So in 2025, they raised 26.2 times the annual dividend interest.
Yeah. And they're like, oh,
26X.
Yeah. And I want to jump in this last part. There are people. So this is what's been going on mainstream media. It's like, so Fong says this, and by the way, I think Fong was, they're like, hey, could you guys get into trouble? He's like, well, yeah, if Bitcoin drops to $8,000, which is a 90% drop, and it stays there for 5 years, you know, we'll probably have to refinance. And people are like, you see, they're going to get in trouble. I want to say something. Yeah. If Bitcoin drops to 8,000 and stays there for 5 years, I'm not going to be talking about Bitcoin. I'll be like, I think we're all, we will, I'll tell you right now, I will give up on this show. If Bitcoin drops to $8,000 for 5 years, I'm not going to be in this call waiting for it to come back.
That's fair.
Okay. Just give you guys a heads up.
Yeah. That was so funny. I mean, they bring Saylor and Fong on those shows, like when things are down, right? I guess they bring them when things are ripping too, but like,
so I don't know if I told the story. So in 2024, I was there. This was in public. First time I met Saylor, and I ran up to him after his presentation. We were at Strategy World. There's a whole group of people around us, not a private setting. I walk up to Saylor. I don't know if I told before. So I walk up to him and said, hey, I'm Grain of Salt. You ever hear me? He's like, no. I'm like, okay. Anyway, I said, can I ask you a quick question? He's like, sure. I said, look, Andrew Ross Sorkin, I think he seems like a sharp guy. He doesn't get what's going on. Does he not get what's going on, or is there something else going on? He's like, they get what's going on. He goes, look, they call me when the price is down. Andrew can't say to them, hey, Saylor, how's the Bitcoin thing going? You know, it looks like it's going up pretty good. And Saylor's like, oh yeah, I'm buying a lot of it. I think it's going to go really high. And like, oh, that's awesome. Oh, that's cool. He goes, it doesn't work like that. He goes, they can't say that, because then they'll be accused of just pumping up the price of Bitcoin or MSTR. So when they come on, it's good cop, bad cop. I didn't invent this. Ross is bad cop. Andrew Ross Sorkin is bad cop. He's like, Saylor, you know, how can this go wrong? And he's like, well, it can't, because of all the metrics we just talked about. And then they're like, oh, so Saylor is playing good cop, and these people on mainstream media play bad cop, and that's the routine. This is not lying, but I just want people to realize he said this in front of a whole group of people. This is not like this was a private conversation. And I'm like, oh, and by the way, I'll let you guys know, when executives have to do a press release, they run that through PR and legal for like three weeks before it goes out. And usually legal writes the press release, and then the executive looks at it. It's like, do you agree with the executives? Like, well, yeah, if legal approved, it looks pretty good. Right, Jeff? I mean,
yeah. It's crazy out there. he was brought on one of the shows, and it's like, they asked, okay, if Bitcoin goes down to 5,000 or to 8,000, will you be able to refinance the debt? Like, will the bank still lend to you? And it's just like, oh my God, I just can't believe we're here. Like, people still think that this is the case. Like that's the highest probability. Like the questions that they ask make it seem like that's the highest probability outcome. You know, without thinking about the future, like the upside exposure.
Jeff, let's go to this slide here, because this is what people keep on saying. They always get wrong. They always get this wrong. Oh, strategy is leverage to the hilt. You hear this all the time. Strategy's leverage is 10%. And they're like, you see, he's 90% leverage. I'm like, what? That's what people think. They cannot understand this. Even we talk about this every week, and they're like, no, strategy is 10%. Triple A rated is 23.1%, right? And then the B is 31%. So they have the lowest leverage out of these, all these comparisons. And you like look at this and they're like, oh no, he's leveraged to the hilt. It's like, I guess they can't. I don't know how they maintain their composure when they keep on getting the same question over and over again.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Going back to that $20 billion that they raised in 2025, it took them like 10 years to raise $200 or $300 million, right? For them to get to the $500 million that they had when they started this strategy,
mm-hmm.
like it took them 10 years to come up with $500 million of cash. And since they started the strategy, now they're just like, yeah, we'll just raise $23 billion of, to buy Bitcoin with every year.
In a year?
In a year, yeah.
In a year.
Yeah, now they do whatever, $500 million to a billion in a week. It's like, oh, we'll just raise it in a week. And you're like, it's truly absurd. So going through this deck is crazy. I mean,
yeah, the deck's important. One other thing I wanted to talk about is, I don't know if I got to jump here in like 6 minutes because I've got another... I've got a meeting tonight that I got to jump to, but there was a lot of complaints this week about Strategy selling common stock last Monday and buying Bitcoin last Monday. I think they bought they sold $90 million and they bought $90 million worth of Bitcoin, and the average price was $78,000. But at the time when the announcement came out, Bitcoin was trading at 67,000, 68,000, something like that. And people exploded, right? Like, oh my God, buying the top. Why didn't they buy, why didn't they buy when it was 60,000? Like, why aren't they buying the dip? But it's like, hindsight's 2020 in all of this stuff. Strategy is not a speculator. They are a long-term investor. When they get the capital in the door, they are deploying it immediately. And just to give some perspective of kind of like how this works, like, yeah, like when you get the capital in the door, like you can clear $90 million in the Bitcoin market. Like, they could have done that in an hour. Like, that Monday that they bought that Bitcoin, I think Bitcoin traded like $70 billion that day. So the ability to go deploy that amount of capital, like $90 million, is just not that big of an order for like to clear in the market. So I'm not surprised that, Monday morning the stock opened strong, they were able to sell equity into the market, and they turned right around and probably had a TWAP for 2 or 3 hours to clear the $90 million, and boom, they had the Bitcoin immediately on the balance sheet. And I don't think they're not speculators. Like, I don't think they want to be taking on price volatility risk in any one direction. If the price of the stock goes a different way or the price of the Bitcoin goes a different way, all of a sudden the economics that made sense when you originally sold the stock may not make sense anymore. And, people can complain like, oh, why aren't they buying it over a week? Well, if you're buying it over a week, like you're taking on timing risk and timing element risk of your entire like calculation for your corporation. So like, this is a large scale operation. They think about this stuff very critically, very, very focused on it. And yeah, like that didn't surprise me at all that they sold stock on a Monday morning, bought Bitcoin on Monday morning when the price was at $78,000, and then proceeded to fall off a cliff.
Yeah. The way that I look at that, and since we're going to be in Vegas, might as well just look at this from a gambling perspective, right? So EV is your expected value. There's always a correct play to make. And the point is to try to either make more or lose less when you make that play. And so if someone offered you the chance, you had to bet that Bitcoin would be more expensive tomorrow or less expensive tomorrow, and you had to make that bet every single day for the rest of your life, you would have to take the bet that it was going to be more expensive tomorrow. to get positive EV. So the idea of like holding back some cash for a dip just doesn't make sense from a pure, you know, expected value view.
And if you got a long-term price target on Bitcoin, if it's $500,000 over the next 10 years, that if it's at 78,000 or 65,000, it doesn't really matter. Right? Like you're taking a long-term perspective. Like this is a 40 CAGR asset for the next 10 years. I want to be long this asset whenever I have the money to buy it. It's the universal, target, right? Like a M&A target. Somebody asked if they buy OTC. I think there's opportunities to buy OTC, but they don't have to. And I would suspect they have trading partners. Look, we're going to have three trading partners at the True North event in Vegas. If you want to talk to the trading partners about how trading works, we are literally going to have them in the room. We're not going to record this. Like you can go ask them the questions that you want to ask them. You could ask them how they do the trading. You can ask them how that goes to custody. Like I can't promise you that it's exactly what Strategy does, but like you're going to get perspective on how like hundreds of millions of dollars of Bitcoin is purchased. And I think that's really interesting because this market is like totally not retail anymore. Like retail doesn't move this market anymore. Institutions move this market. How institutions are buying it, buying spot, how institutions are hedging in different derivatives. It's just so much more complex than I think a lot of people really understand. And they don't need to go OTC to go clear a $90 million order. And it's like OTC isn't always available. Like it sometimes works, sometimes not.
Yeah. You know, I just want to be respectful. You got to drop off, but look, I don't know why there are some Bitcoiners that are hoping for either Michael Saylor or Strategy's failure when they're buying $23 billion worth of Bitcoin. It's the biggest buyer of it. So I don't see why they're self-destruct. Oh, it's centralized. You know what? The Gini coefficient for Bitcoin is highly centralized already with the big shareholders. So that's always been the case. So the takeaway is, if it's good for a person, it's good for a company, and then it's good for a sovereign nation. And I don't know why they're like, oh, this is antithetical to what Bitcoin is. I'm like, no, it's a store of value. And now it has switched from a store of value to being collateral for digital credit. And if you don't believe in that, then you're not updating your beliefs. That's the whole thing. You're just arguing for the sake of arguing.
Totally. Okay, so one thing that's interesting, this is Coinbase's balance sheet. And I brought this up because the valuation for MSTR and Coinbase are very similar, right? As of right now, MSTR has got 714,000 Bitcoin. Coinbase has 14,000 Bitcoin. So MSTR literally has 700,000 Bitcoin more than Coinbase. And their market cap valuations are nearly identical. So I looked at the balance sheet just for curiosity. And Coinbase has $31 billion in assets and $15 billion in liabilities. And it was interesting when I was looking at the balance sheet here, the customer custodial funds is sitting on the asset side of the balance sheet, at least some of their custodial funds. And so that was interesting to me. And I think Strategy's obviously got what, like $55 billion of Bitcoin.
Jeff, let's do the simple math here. If you've got $31 billion in assets and $15 billion in liabilities, that means you're 50% freaking leveraged.
Yeah, exactly.
Or to say it this way, they have five times the leverage, right? Because Strategy is 10%.
So
they have five times the leverage of Strategy.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, but and Strategy has the 700,000 Bitcoins. Like, so basically the 700,000 Bitcoins in these two comparisons, the 700,000 Bitcoins are being valued at zero.
Zero. Hmm. Yeah. And like of the assets on Coinbase's balance sheet, $5.4 billion are intangible goodwill.
Can you explain, Jeff, what goodwill means?
Goodwill is like a fugazi. It's like
I'll tell you what goodwill is. Goodwill is like a trademark, like the Nike swoosh,
yes,
or the Ferrari logo. I would tell you that the fact that Coinbase thinks that they have $4 billion in goodwill, I think that that's kind of wishful thinking, in my view.
So it's the excess. I think if I remember correctly from my accounting days, my conversations with our internal accounting team, it's like the excess premium that you paid for a company that you've acquired. So it's like the valuation, like it's like the excess valuation of a.
About what you just said, if that's true.
Oh, it's crazy.
The fact
it's like
that I overpaid for a company. Yes. I then count that as equity.
You carry it as an asset on your balance sheet. It's insane.
You overpaid. Oh, well, I guess that's true because you overpaid because you thought it was good. So therefore, it's a good thing that you overpaid.
That's they crazy. Overpaid for that damn Super Bowl commercial too. And so it's terrible.
Yeah. And goodwill is one of these things that like it kind of gets audited, but it's this place where accountants can kind of like, you know, move stuff around a little bit. Like you're supposed to kind of draw it down over time but it's just this moving figure that's always a bit strange. Anyway, that's not the reason I brought it up. The reason I brought it up is because they have customer custodial funds on their asset side. And I don't know how much strategy has with Coinbase, but I think it's like, I don't know, it's probably a decent amount. And they have $5 billion sitting as a technical asset on their balance sheet. I would assume that's like Bitcoin in custody that's not truly in like self-custody. It's not like held in self-custody or something like that. I'm not 100% sure.
Jeff, you know what's crazy about this? If you look at the liabilities from 2024 to 2025 in the bottom row, the two columns, yeah. It went up by $3 billion in additional liabilities. On Strategy's balance sheet, it went from zero in cash to $2.25 billion in cash. And so these went in opposite directions.
Totally.
They acquired an additional $3 billion in liabilities, and Strategy raised $2.25 billion in cash in 1 month of December. And so, yeah. Like you said, the market has mispriced this. And you look at this and you're like, people are like, yeah, I don't get what you guys are saying. I'm like, I don't know how I can make this any simpler.
And I don't bring this up to shit on Coinbase. Like, I think Coinbase is a good company. I think they are acting in best interests of the people that hold assets at their company. I think they have a good solution for custody. And I think they're good trading partners. They've got good options or like ability to lend off of it and do other things. But
this is a good example. This is like comparing AWS of Amazon versus Google. I'm not talking about the Amazon, delivery side of it. But if you wanted to compare something that's in the same industry, I will tell you that Coinbase is basically in the same industry as Strategy. And therefore, I think it is a fair comparison.
Yeah. And they're valued about the same right now, which is just insane, right? Like, who has a better product right now, like Stretch or Coinbase Custody? Like, think about the moat, right? Like, capital, 700,000 Bitcoin is like a absolutely fucking enormous moat. Like, mm-hmm. Custody is not an absolutely fucking enormous moat,
right? Like, and it's disrupted. By the way, it can be disrupted.
Yeah, and think about custody. It pays an incredible low. Sub 1% or bips, right?
Fees are like just, like they're going to go lower and lower and lower and lower.
Right. Yep. Did we just lose Jeff?
I think that was an unceremonious departure.
So are we still going, guys? Or what's the story? What do you want to do?
Sorry.
Oh, Jeff is back.
Yeah, sorry,
you said
guys.
My internet
cut out. But yeah, I got to jump. Thank you everybody for joining. My final thoughts are price action sucks. But I'm incredibly bullish here. I like these price targets. I think risk is mispriced. People don't understand what the risk profile of these instruments are. And I look forward to, talking about it. So yeah, come to True North World. It's Monday, February 23rd, if you can make it. And look forward to meeting everybody there that can be there. And let's chat all this stuff, but I'll kick it over to you guys. Feel free to keep running. Mike, you got your model that you can walk through, but if not,
I'll walk through the model right now. If you guys want to stay on for this, we'll just do it since we have a lot of people here and I'll take people
cool.
through it.
Right. Catch on. You all later. See ya.
See ya, Jeff.
See ya, Jeff. Okay. Let's see if this works. You want to cover something real quick before I go through the model?
No, let's see the model and then we'll respond.
Yeah. Okay. So let me show you this. So I'll give the quick backdrop. So at Strategy World, at the True North event that we're having, the Inside event, I'm going to be a host with a couple people on stage. I already know who they are, but we're not saying who they are publicly. And so the question is, as the host, how do you value a Bitcoin treasury common stock? That was the idea. And I was like, well, I got to put something, I have to figure out how I would value it. And then I will talk to these other people in advance. It's my goal to have a discussion with them beforehand and say, how do you guys value this? So we have that. So I wanted to come up with something that, that I can figure out how to value it. So with that said, let me jump to what I did. Share window. Okay. Let me know if this is big enough when it comes through. Let's see. I will zoom in here. So let me view, zoom, 150%. Is that big enough or I need to zoom in some more?
Yeah, do it again.
Okay. That's the biggest I can make. Okay, so let me tell you why I did this. I based this on a slide that was in their deck. So I will scroll down over here. This is the slide that's in the deck. And because I have it zoomed in, it's hard for me to scroll around. So this is important. This is what I reverse engineered. So Strategy says on the top of this slide, medium. They had a low, medium, and high. And what they said was double the Bitcoin per share in 7 years, right? And I was looking at this and I thought, 7 years is an odd number. And then I saw the annual BTC yield is 10%. And then it hit me because Saylor, I've already talked about this. He says this all the time. This is rule of 72. So they just rounded down from 7.2 years to 7 years. So 7.2 times 10% equals 72. That's the rule of 72. That's the double metric. And so they're showing the Bitcoin per share in sats doubles. That's their numbers. That's not mine. Now, the other tidbit that they put in here is they also say that the MNAV will have to be 1.75x. Now, if somebody says to me, you don't know if it's going to, I'm like, you know, I don't know that. But in an SEC regulated deck, Strategy put this out there and they said 1.75x. Not me. They said it. So I'm like, okay, given this information, let me start calculating this. So what I did was I did the historicals. Like, how does it work historically? So starting in September of 2020, they had 38,300 Bitcoin. Hold on 1 second. MSTR share price was $15. That was split adjusted. And the shares outstanding, they only reported it yearly in the old days. So I just want to be clear. The reason why I don't have it quarterly in these over here, why they're in yellow is that was at the end of the year. They then reported the number of shares outstanding. So the old data is not as good as you'd like it to be. So there's no inference. So here's the date. So your Bitcoin per share was 0.00074. Well, if you get to today, you're at 0.0021. Now, because I'm super fast in math, I know that 7 times 3 is 21, right? So basically, your Bitcoin per share tripled over this time frame in 5 years. They got a triple. I'm like, okay, now they're saying it's only going to double. This is in 5 years. They're saying it's going to double in 7 years. So I looked at that, and so I came up with my own metric, which is this over here on the right. Here's your quarter over quarter growth rate. And here's your BTC year over year growth rate, which is about 62%. And this is on a quarterly basis. The numbers are all correct, but mathematically, if you have more data points, the numbers look a little smaller. It's just the way it looks. And then I did this BTC per share value multiple since 2020. So this is the part that people don't get. They say this all the time. They're diluting the shares. They're diluting the shareholders. But the value, it went up. If you look over here, the BTC per share times the BTC price was equal to about $21. And it went to $256. And that's because there's more Bitcoin per share. It did a triple. But when you look at it on a dollar basis, it did a 12X. So this is my own metric that I made up and put it in there. So with that said, how did I then calculate, how do I get a price? So now we go down here to my projections, and I have low, medium, and high. In the low projection, I said that the BTC CAGR, which means your BTC held, somebody asked me, dude, how'd you get a Bitcoin price of 672,500. No, that's the number of Bitcoin held on December 31st of 2025. They had 672,500 Bitcoins. And I'm saying it grows, that grows at 20% a year. Okay. Now, what I did independently, as I said, the shares outstanding grows at 8%. The sweet spot is about 12%. But if I was to make this over here, if I was to make this 10%, it recalculates. That is equal to, oh my God, remember this slide over here? They're saying the annual BTC yield is 10%. And so what I wanted to, the reason why I didn't do this is just Bitcoin per share at 10% was because I want people to realize that it's freaking accretive. And they're like, well, how is it accretive? It can only be accretive if you're getting 20% per year in Bitcoin held and your share count is only going up by 10%, right? So the difference there is that 10% BTC yield. And people are like, it's not accretive. They're just diluting the shareholders. No, because on a percentage basis, and this is why, if you look at the BTC share calculations over, this is over 7 years, it's 0.00216. And it goes here. It does not make the full double. It doesn't. And that's the reason why I changed this to 8% is because these are both being calculated independently. So when I change it to 8%, right, which is about 12% because they're two independent variables, this BT, your BTC per share calculation finally doubles. And I could change this to 9%. So I made this particularly, you could see right there, when the difference is 11%, your BTC per share doubles. And that's why I made this with two separate calculators to get to that number. And then I basically calculated the share price over here in this column. So I'll take any questions from right there. Did I make sense the way I'm doing this? It's really, yeah, this is the most rudimentary. Now, if somebody says to me, did you take into account the cash, the converts, the prefs, the yield payments? No. No, because I'd have to make all these crazy assumptions, or I'd have to get everybody convinced that these assumptions would work, and I just couldn't do it. Dan, you have much more complex analysis than I have. But what I then did, somebody said to me, is you didn't use MNAV. And I'm like, okay, I'll do MNAV. Here's the MNAV calculation. And what I did on the MNAV calculation, let me zoom over. So now you can see the MNAV here. And so here's the price. Again, this is at 20% and 8%. You double your Bitcoin per share. In this case, the MNAV is 0.75 and the share count is 783. Now, what's also important to note is that I said Bitcoin's only going up 10% a year. So in 2032, the price of Bitcoin is only 231,000. Because if Bitcoin goes up higher and everything else stays the same, then the price of the stock goes up more. And oh my God, I don't know if you guys remember, there was this slide that Strategy said, and they said their MNAV guidance was 1.75. I didn't say it. They said it. So what I did was, is, well, this is the 1.0 MNAV over here. And then if I go scroll all the way down here and I'll go across, here's the 1.75 MNAV. So the Bitcoin per share, it almost doubles in this calculation. I did 36 and 24%. The price of Bitcoin is going up 20%. And this almost doubled. And the share price is $3,068 a share at a 1.75 MNAV. And you're like, that's too aggressive. I'm like, okay, but I'm saying Bitcoin only gets to 428,000. I'm not saying Bitcoin even gets to a million at a 20% growth. So you guys tell me which one you want me to change and I'll change the numbers and we'll come up with a good number.
Yeah, that bull case almost kind of looks, as far as Bitcoin's CAGR, that almost looks like the base case. I'd pump that to 30.
Yeah, so if pump, okay, you want to pump this to 30. Okay, we pump this to, now this is linear CAGR. I pump it to 30, it goes to, Bitcoin goes to 746,000. I didn't change the 1.75 multiple. mm-hmm. the price of the stock goes to 5,300. It almost doubles. You know, and I could go over here in this scenario. We could do them all at, you know, 30, do this one at 30%. The stock goes to 3,000 at a one. This is at a one MNAV, right? On the 30% number, right? This is at a, you know, a one MNAV. Bitcoin hits 746. I think that the 30% is kind of high. I would make that. Dan, what do you think is a good number on the CAGR? I think 20% is more realistic.
On BTC?
Yeah, BT. What do you model BTC CAGR for the next 5 to 7 years?
I do 30.
You do 30? Oh, wow. You guys are... Okay. Go back to... Okay, 30%. At a 1 MNAV, the stock goes to $3,000 a share in 2032. And the BTC share calc is pretty much exactly double. And
they've got 4 million Bitcoin?
They got 4 million Bitcoin. You see, what happens is in this scenario at the top, at a 20%, they only end up with 2 million. And if I change this to 30%, they only end up at 2.5 million Bitcoin. Bitcoin is at the same 746. The MNAV, I will change the MNAV to 1.0 for all the bears. And there it is. The stock price is $3,300 a share. It's the BTC basically is a little bit more than a double, right? I can make this 9% right here. It's a perfect double. It's at $3,100 a share. Bitcoin's not even a million. I mean, this makes sense, right? Now, I'm not taking into account. The reason why I don't want to take the prefs into account, because they have $2.25 billion in cash, which means they could pay the yield for 2.5 years. So I figured, why model that? Because they already have the cash to pay the yield.
Yeah.
Okay. That's the whole analysis. Oh, the other thing I did, this chart might be interesting. Bitcoin CAGR. This chart is interesting. I want to just do real quick and then we zoom. This I find interesting. People keep on saying, when does Bitcoin hit a million? And so I did the different CAGR amounts starting at 100,000. And if you look, the biggest change is from 10 to 20%. But when you go from 20 to 30%, it hacks off a few years, but then diminishing return sets in. So I don't think we have 40% CAGR, but the difference between 30, you know, this is like the sweet spot is about 30% CAGR. That gets us to a million in about 9 years. And this is just plain simple math. So,
yeah, I agree with that sort of timeline.
Yeah. And I want to, and I'll wrap up with this part. The reason why I do multiple columns is to force people to make a constrained decision. Oh, do you think the CAGR is going to be 20, 30, 40%? They're like, well, I don't know, maybe 30. I'm like, okay, well, now that you see the difference, like 30 is kind of like the sweet spot, not too high, not too low. It's probably not going to be 50, and 10% doesn't justify the risk. So it's probably going to be somewhere between 20 and 30, right? And that tends to be, well, we're going to get to a million in less than 10 years, you know, somewhere about there. So that's why I show multiple columns to force people into making a decision, an informed decision. That's why I do it this way. But anyway, that was my whole thing.
I like it, Grant.
Yeah, and so
I'm wiped. I'm probably going to sign off. Should we do final thoughts here?
Final thoughts. Go ahead.
I think people need to weather the storm and are being. I think there's a lot of irrationality at market lows, and there was a lot of irrationality at market highs, myself included. Keep the middle path. Stay along the middle road. Don't get too crazy in either direction.
Soleil?
Yeah, for me, I mean, if Bitcoin's going up forever, Laura, then every day is the best time to buy. And if not today, then tomorrow's the best time to buy.
Yeah. And you know, I will reveal a conversation before we went live. Look, if the price of Bitcoin and Strategy is way higher, then we'll be drinking in to celebrate in Las Vegas. If the price is lower, then like I said, we'll just hang out and have a good time with friends and commiserate. But I think the number's always, it's NGU, the number's going up. So thank you everybody for joining.
Amazing.
Yep. Thanks everybody. Thanks guys.
Right. Thanks. Bye.